Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, an independent educational consultant located in North Idaho. All the interviews in this series can be found at strugglingteens.com, and there, along with 26 years of essays, visit reports, and press releases relating to the network of private, parent-choice residential schools and programs working with teens and young people making poor decisions. Today is December 7th, 2015, and we're going to talk about counseling. My guest is Dr. Mark S. Conrad, M.D., a psychiatrist. And good afternoon. Good to talk to you here, Dr. Conrad.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity to share what I hope are some useful ideas.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it. Now, Dr. Conrad is a psychiatrist. He's author of a book, and we'll talk about this a little bit, You Need Help, A Step-by-Step Guide to Convince a Loved One to Get Counseling. And we took from that the title of this, Convincing a Loved One to Get Counseling. He's also a member of the prestigious American College of Psychiatrists, which I understand there's a little over 700 members worldwide, so that's quite an honor. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Nice to be recognized by one's peers.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not easy to come by either. Okay, let's start with the topic. First off, why would people deny they need counseling? Because we all see people and they need some help, they're suffering, and we can see that they need counseling. But why is it so hard sometimes to get them to do that?
Well, that's a very important and relevant question. You know, the fact of the matter is I wrote this book to try to help people get mental health counseling. And, you know, there are not many other fields in medicine where people who could use state-of-the-art treatment have such a difficult time agreeing to get it. You know, you don't have a lot of books on why you should convince a loved one to see an orthopedic a surgeon or a cardiologist.
Right.
But in mental health, getting them to agree to treatment is often, you know, the toughest step of all. There's so many treatments that are effective, that are helpful, but they all depend on your showing up for them. So there are many reasons. In fact, I devote a whole chapter, ironically, maybe not so surprisingly, the longest chapter of the book, as to why we need such a book. Why aren't people showing up? And I go over a variety of things. I talk a lot about the social and cultural factors, particularly in this country, where self-reliance, independence, and kind of the just-do-it Nike spirit has been characteristic of our country really since its origins, and the way in which we celebrate and vaunt free will and control makes it very difficult for us to admit to emotional vulnerabilities and the need for, you know, some actual professional help. Sometimes some psychiatric conditions can actually impair your insight. Some of the more serious illnesses, schizophrenia, some of the serious mood disorders, people don't even think that they're ill. They cannot see themselves as others see them. They have a kind of self-blindness. It's actually a special fancy Greek word we use, anos agnosia, to describe this phenomenon. It's not—it's particularly common, say, in schizophrenia. So people can often not even see that they have a problem. Of course, there's also more routine reasons for not showing up, denial, in which you really minimize your problem. And, of course, the whole problem of stigma about mental illness and treatment, that's something we're making some headways in. A lot of misinformation out there about psychiatrists. A lot of people who still think, you know, it's all about being on the couch and spending years and years just yakking away on the couch, and really have not been updated about the contemporary changes in the development of the science. A lot of times there are people who are reluctant to come because sometimes it does take some time. We live sort of in the culture of what I call the Maalox moment. Remember that old advertisement, expect relief in a Maalox moment, where people expect a quick fix, and sometimes the nature of the problems that we treat have often taken people years to get into, and it's not something that gets better with, you know, a single couple of visits. And I think that, of course, we can't have this discussion without mentioning some of the financial barriers. The cost of treatment, the lack of, up until recently, the lack of equality, or what we call parity in insurance coverage, which often treated covered mental conditions differently than physical conditions. And now, even if you do have insurance, sometimes the insurance won't even pay for the services that you need, not thinking that it's so-called medically necessary. And people get into arguments with their insurance company. In fact, one of the notorious examples is the shooter in Chattanooga last summer. The naval base tried to get some treatment some months before the incident, and his insurance company refused to pay for it. So the family was left in the lurch. And also, it's a manpower shortage. It's often very difficult to get an appointment with mental health care professionals. There are just not enough of us to go around.
Well, let me.
So those
me,
are just a few of the reasons.
Yeah, I have one in particular in mind. I work primarily with teenagers, and very often what I see with the teenagers, they might have behavioral problems, everything's falling apart, and they say, well, everything would be fine if my parents would just get off my back or something like that. Talk about how you might approach, say, you had a kid client that was saying that.
Right. So, you know, sometimes that there is a tendency, not just for teenagers, but for others, to shift the blame, mm-hmm. to say, it's not my problem. I'm not the problem. You know, it's other parents or other people, in this case parents, that have the problem. And I think that parents in that situation, they can actually use that to advantage to say, look, you know, that might be the case, but I tell you what, why don't we go and we'll have a consultation and we'll kind of lay out the problems before us with somebody who understands these things, who can figure out what's going on, who, if I'm part of the problem, can let me know and let me know what I can do to fix it. And if there's some additional things that you can be helped with in terms of working directly with you, that professional will tell us that as well. So you can actually use that as a way to get that door open and to get your adolescent to agree to come with you, especially, and the fact of the matter is, by the way, you might well be at least partially part of the problem, and that would be actually good to find out what you can do to help or at least not make things worse for your adolescent.
Okay, what are some of the other things, and give a couple examples of maybe of some clients that you've had to where there was the denial and how you got through that?
Well, you know, there are a number of tricks that I've learned over the years, and some of these examples are in the book. You know, I think that the most important thing that I'm trying to get across here in the book is that it is very, very important for people to have an intention to help those they care about, to get professional treatment. Very often people just aren't able to get across the finish line on their own without having somebody in the caring circle of their lives to help them. So I think devoting yourself to the project of getting somebody else a state-of-the-art evaluation and treatment to be able to benefit from what mental health treatment has to offer is very important. And I think that approaching people in a caring, loving way is actually very key to be able to talk about how, you know, our relationship is very important to me, and I care about you, and I'm concerned about you, and I really would like to at least figure out what's going on here. And that means being specific about what are the actual things you're observing. So you don't make a diagnosis. That's the whole goal of getting in the door to a professional. You don't say, I think you're depressed, or you don't say, I think you have a drinking problem, or you don't say, you know, I think you have ADHD or OCD. No, you say, I noticed that you, when you stand at the sink, you wash the dishes for hours and you know, can't be part of the family because you're busy going over and over the dishes. Or I've noticed that, you know, when we go out to dinner, you come home and you often fall right asleep because, you know, you seem to have had a lot to drink. Or you say, you know, you haven't gotten up and gone to work for several days in a row, and you're not sleeping well at night, and you appear to be losing weight. So you point out the very, very specific symptoms, and you say, I don't know what's going on, and I don't know how to help you with that, but what I'd like to do is to be able to consult with somebody who might be able to figure out what that's all about. Now, you don't necessarily have to start in a mental health professional's office. You could start in other kinds of medical offices. You know, the fact of the matter is that the most of the psychiatric care in this country for straightforward things like depression or anxiety disorders or attention deficit disorder is actually not given by psychiatrists or mental health professionals, usually provided by primary care docs. 9 out of 10 antidepressant prescriptions in this country are written by primary care physicians. Most of the medications for anxiety is written by primary care physicians. At least half of all the prescriptions for attention deficit disorders are written by pediatricians. So it does not necessarily have to start out in a primary care doc's office, so the mental health professional's office. So primary care people can be a very, very important ally in this process.
Okay, well,
however,
run out of time, so go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay. However, sometimes that's not enough, and sometimes one has to tap deeper powers in the family, powers that allow you to steer people. This is particularly true with, you know, adult children or adolescents, to utilize privileges and consequences as a way of getting people to get into treatment. So I had one family, for example, who said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to actually change the password modem, the modem password, and until you go and agree to get an evaluation. And after you do, we'll give you the password. And it worked. And he, that they got their kid in to see me. And by the way, it was necessary for the kid to be on medication. It made a very big difference to him. And at one point, he got reluctant to take the medication. So we came up with the plan in which they would change the password every day. And they would give the password so that he could play his online games after he took the medications. So those are some examples of how families can use privileges that are part of being a family member to be able to steer people into treatment and help them cooperate with treatment. And then finally, my book includes a whole section on involuntary treatment and how to mobilize, if necessary and when it's necessary, the involuntary treatment system and how to optimize the outcome of that system. And there's quite a few tips about that level. But those are last resorts.
Oh, absolutely. But it's fascinating. And I assume this is just a sample of what's in the book. So tell a little bit more of how somebody could find out, how they could order the book, or if they wanted to contact you and talk to you about it, they could.
Right. I think everything that you might want to find out would be on the book's website, which is very simple. YouNeedHelpBook.com. YouNeedHelpBook.com. All one word. You can read more about the book, articles about the book, a number of interviews that I've done about the book, and there's information there about how to contact me if you'd like to consult about a situation you're in.
Okay, well, very good. Well, we've run out of time. Very fascinating, and this 10 minutes just breezed right by. But this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. We've been talking with Dr. Mark S. Comrade, psychiatrist, and author of a book, You Need Help, A Step-by-Step Guide to Convince a Loved One, and the topic has been convincing a loved one to get counseling. Well, thank you very much. Been very enlightening, and good luck, and I hope you have good sales, Mark.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your support and helping get the word out that you can make a difference in the life of the person that you care about.
You sound like you're on a mission, and I think it's a great one.